Good morning. So, last time we talked about implementing pipelining in circuits. We talked about the key idea that when we want to have a pipeline circuit where we do one step, then move on to the next for our first instruction while doing the first step for our second instruction. And my mic seems, it's not on. Okay. So, as I said, yes, that's better. Okay. So, in our circuit design, we added these registers to separate our pipeline stages. So, when we're moving on from the first to second stage for our first instruction, the second stage can be fed its values by these registers, which leaves the first stage free to use different values for the second instruction, and then on to the third instruction, and so on. We talked about adding pipelining to our processor, and one of the things we need to do as a preparation for that is we need to combine the fetch and PC update stages. And the reason for this is that, we need to get this XPC as soon as possible. If we want to start the second instruction right away, we need to know where the second instruction is right away. And this poses some problems we'll have to solve later, like, wait a moment, if I have a return instruction, how am I going to get the return address from the data memory, which we haven't done yet? We're going to fix that later. We'll talk about how. We also talked about adding pipelining to our single cycle processor. Key preparation was that we wanted to make sure that our stages, we knew what stages we wanted, but we wanted to make sure that signals went from one stage to the next. We didn't want to have some signals go from stage one to stage two, and some signals go from stage two to stage five, because that means that if we think about what instructions a stage is getting signals for, stage five is going to have some things from one instruction and some things from another, and that's not going to work out. We need to have all the signals for an instruction sent together, or else we're kind of executing part of one instruction and part of another, which doesn't make sense if we're starting from our single cycle design. And related to that, we talked about our control signals in pipelining. So keeping values together also applies for things that I haven't usually drawn on diagrams, like passing I codes to set the mem read bit and so on. So we're going to need to pass those through pipeline registers now, because we can't just like look at the I code from the instruction memory in the write back stage, because the instruction memory is working on one instruction, the write back stage working on a different one. We're going to look at the wrong I code if we do that. I guess I realized I forgot to write another topic we discussed. So we also talked about critical paths. So if we talk about how fast pipelining is, the big thing we want to look for is the path from storage to storage. That's known as things we need to do in a cycle, and the longest of those is known as a critical path. And that's how we set our cycle time. So when we're choosing our stages, our hope is that our stages are going to be roughly equal in length, so the longest stage is as short as possible. So before I move on to talking about something that we kind of glossed over that didn't actually work, that we're going to fix with our pipeline. Questions about things we covered in pipelining and adding pipelining to our single cycle processor? Okay, not seeing any. So, our first example of a pipeline processor was for ADQ. And I showed you a diagram of how ADQ worked, but let's look at a case where we're going to see something bad happen. So I have ADQ, and I have my setup where R8 has 800, R9 has 900. So let's figure out what's this supposed to do just by looking at the assembly. So if I look at the assembly, I'm supposed to say R9 gets R8 plus R9, which is going to be 800 plus 900, which is going to be 1700. Okay, seems fairly straightforward. And then we're going to do R8 gets R9 plus R8. And, well, R9 was just set to 1700, so this should be 1700 plus 800, which is going to be 2500. So the result we want is that R8 becomes 2500 from the second instruction, and R9 becomes 1700 from the first instruction. That's what our assembly is supposed to do. That's what our single cycle processor hopefully did. But if we trace what happens in this instruction, we're going to find out that when it comes time for the second add to read the value of R9, it's going to read 900. So why is it going to read 900? What? Because you say, well, wait a minute. The previous instruction put 1700. Yes, it did. And while we're inputting into source A here on 9, we have sitting over here, we have the value, while we're inputting a 9, we have sitting over here as input to this register here, we have 1700 and 9. So the value we want, that 1700, hasn't made it to the register file yet. So while we're inputting a 9 to get, it's going to turn out a 900 into our decode execute pipeline register. The first instruction is inputting 1700, the result of the add, and 9, the destination register, into the execute write back registers. And because it's in the execute, going to the execute write back registers, it has to first go through the write back registers to get there. And so go through that register, so come out of that register. And then we need to wait another cycle for it to get actually stored in the register file before we can actually read it from the register file. So this problem where we do our straightforward pipelining and we get the wrong result is called a data hazard. I guess any problem where you get the wrong result is called a hazard. One where we get the wrong result because we're getting the wrong value, called a data hazard. We'll have some other types of hazards are there. One we'll talk about is control hazards, which are that situation I talked about with return earlier. We'll get to that later. So questions on why things are wrong here before we talk about how we're going to fix this. And another way of viewing what's wrong is that we can think of, our ISA, our instruction set specification, said we do things in one order, and our pipeline is doing them in the wrong order. We're doing the reads before the writes, which is not what our instruction set specification says things we're supposed to do. So let's talk about some fixes. So I'm going to first start with the simplest fix from the perspective of the hardware designer. And that's to say, it's not my problem that that instruction set is wrong, because it's really inconvenient for me to implement. I have to do something. So I'm just going to change the instruction set. Add queues, take effect, 3 instructions later. By 3 instructions, we need to wait 2 extra cycles. So they don't take away 1, which would be normal. They take 2 extra cycles before it actually gets written. So if the compiler or an assembly writer wants to do this sequence of adds, you need to add like 2 NOPs or 2 other instructions that don't use R9. And you might say, this is crazy. Why would we ever do that? But there are real processors and instruction sets where they decided that this was okay to do. That they're going to say, you know, if you want to write code for this processor, you need to obey this rule, these rules about it's going to take some extra cycles for values to be stored and available. This is not really favored these days because, contrary to what probably people were thinking when they made this choice, people don't like recompiling their code a lot. People expect to get software like commercially and have it be compiled once 10 years ago and still work. And that doesn't really work very well with this philosophy because I have a different design for my processor. The number of knobs might change, right? If I have different stages, if I decide to divide up my processor in a different way, the number of knobs I'm going to need is going to change. I need to recompile everything. And that's usually not considered an acceptable trade-off. But we can take this idea and we can apply this to make a hardware solution. So a hardware solution is that we have the same assembly code, but the hardware somehow detects, oh, something's going to go wrong here, and inserts the knob itself. So what do I mean by inserting the knob? That we're going to have some extra logic where rather than changing the PC, we leave the PC the same and we send out of the fetch stage values for a knob rather than the actual instruction we're fetching. So you just send out of the fetch some do-nothing values. And this solution is known as stalling. So if we added stalling, which I didn't add to my circuit diagram here, but because we need some extra logic, like we need some way of getting different values in our pipeline registers, then what would happen is we'd have two cycles where in this example, I incremented the PC originally before, but I chose to keep the PC the same because I detected, wait a moment, I just got this instruction that reads from R9, and that's not going to work. So rather than run that instruction, I'm going to have some mux which sends a knob. So we have mux to send a knob. And our knob in this case is write to register, read and write from registers 15 and 15, register none. So that's a no-op with an add instruction. And I'm also going to have a mux to not increment. So that's going to be my stalling logic. And I'm going to have to detect whether to do that by checking the register numbers we're reading from and comparing them with register numbers that haven't been written yet. We'll talk later about how we might figure out what those are. But that's somehow I want to write that in my mux as my condition. Yes. So the question is, for the mux here that is on this pipeline register, we're just going to set RA and RB to register none? Yes. So that's what we're going to do when we detect that we need to wait to get a value we're trying to read. Yes?
If the read value is none, does it mean the register file outputs random value and you get random value in the register after add?
The question is, what happens when I try to read from register none in our register file? Our register file just outputs a zero. That's an arbitrary choice that we've made. Other questions? So once we add these two cycles of stalling, this exactly, solves our problem, and with the minimum amount of extra cycles of stalling that we could do. Why the minimum amount? Because at the end of this cycle, so right, you know, here in our timing diagram, time goes down. That's where we do the write. Why then? Because we're outputting 1700 during that cycle to the register file to the write. So after that, it's written. And our read is going to happen in cycle 4 here. So we're doing the read as soon as possible after the write. And I was showing you this sort of picture in terms of here are the values that are being output by the pipeline registers at each time. Another view we can have is we can say, well, at any time there's a particular instruction in each stage, and what instruction is that? And under that view, here's what's happening. We have our first add, and it goes through the pipeline normally, from fetch to the code to execute to write back. And our second add, we keep in fetch. But something has to be in decode and execute and write back, so we send a NOP, which I'll call, and our textbook calls, a pipeline bubble. So that's taking up the empty space in our pipeline, the air. Okay, so questions on this diagram here? Okay. So what I showed you here, you know, we're solving what I call a data hazard. And I want to give some terminology here. So sometimes people say, okay, so whenever we're using a value that something else earlier on writes, that's a hazard. No. So that is what we'll call a dependency. So if the result of one instruction depends on another, that's a dependency. And a dependency might cause a hazard, or it might not. So hazard is something that doesn't work in a particular pipeline. So to know if something's a hazard, we have to have a pipeline in mind. And if we split things up into different stages, we'll have different hazards. So our single cycle processor, we still have dependencies, instructions depend on each other, we don't have hazards. And this was a hazard between R8, R9, and R9, R8. And this was not a hazard. The NOPs meant it's not a hazard in that pipeline. And some other pipeline, maybe it would be. Okay, so we know about resolving hazards with stalling. So how many stalls are needed for this example here? So I want the same add processor, which only has four stages, F fetch, F D decode, E execute, W write back. And a way I like figuring this out is making this timeline I've started at the bottom. So where I say, you know, this instruction, during cycle 0 it's in fetch, then decode, then execute, then write back. And the add queue is going to, second add queue rather, R10, R11, it's going to be in fetch during cycle 1. I just fill out this diagram, and I look for, well, you know, this instruction here, this first one, we write to R9 at the end of cycle 3. So anything that reads from R9 needs to be after that line I drew. And if it's not, we're going to need to add stalling to make that happen. So that's how I recommend going about this and figure out how many stalls do we need to get rid of our data hazards here, however many we might have. Okay, who'd like some more time? Not seeing anyone. So who thinks we need zero cycles of stalling? Just already works. Okay, no one? Who thinks we need one? Just one cycle of stalling. Okay, so some people. Two cycles of stalling. Okay, three. Okay, one. Four. More than four. Okay, so a majority of people say two. And I'm guessing there's sort of two ways I see people come up with that answer. So one is you say, oh gosh, we have a dependency here, R9, and I saw that we need to add two cycles before, so I'm going to add two cycles. There we go. Another way people come up with that is they say, I see R9 depends on R9, and R11 here depends on R11. And, well, we needed two cycles before, but that's because we just needed to delay things enough. And the instructions were right next to each other, but here they're not. So if we think of our timeline, our add would normally be fetched, our sec add R9 would normally be fetched there, but we need its decode to not happen until after this line. So you'd say that's one cycle of stalling, and the logic would be, oh, we do that twice. Okay. So those are probably how you came up with the answer two. Two is not correct. The answer is one. And the problem is that one cycle of stalling that we do helps both instructions, both of the dependencies. It resolves both of the hazards at once. So even though we have two hazards to resolve, that one cycle of stalling overlaps with, delays both of these second adds, which is enough to make them be on time to read the correct value. Yes? So your question is, can I explain why it's only one cycle for that we need for the add or nine hazard? Okay, so for the add or nine hazard, the value is going to be written at the end of cycle three. So our requirement to make that work is that the decode of the add or nine needs to happen in cycle four. If it happens any earlier, the value is not written yet. So to resolve that, I'm going to delay R9 just enough to make that happen. And how long is just enough? Well, add R9 would normally start in cycle 2, its fetch, therefore it would decode in cycle 3, so I just need to delay it by one cycle. So that's why there's one cycle stalling for that first hazard. And back there?
The reason we want decode and not fetch behind is because fetch is just getting the instruction code.
The question is, why do we want decode and not fetch? And that's... And you say, is it because fetch is just getting the instruction code? So it's more importantly because decode is where we're getting that value. So if we were concerned, if we got read the registers in some other stage, we want to wait until that stage. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Yeah. The fetch of these instructions don't have dependencies on each other? Yes. Except for the dependency on PC calculation, but that's not going to be a factor. So it's not like we have like a jump to a value based on a register or something like that, in which case we'd have to worry about that. Okay, other questions? Okay, so you see, sort of what I look for in looking at these data hazards here is I say, where is the value going to be available? I need to make sure the thing that uses the value, which in this case is decode, that's what where we first need the value. You have to make sure the value is there in time, If not, we need to add stalling to delay the instruction enough, and we need to pay attention that when we stall one instruction, we're stalling the ones after it, because we don't like run the instructions out of order. So, questions? Gone. So, this is our stalling solution to data hazards, and we could talk about how to implement this in HTLRS, but we're not going to do that yet. And the main reason why is that this is not actually a very nice solution. It's like it works. We're still going to get a lot of the benefit of pipelining, but it's very unsatisfying because, well, writing assembly code like this is pretty common, right? It's pretty common that we'll try to do things like this. And it's really disappointing if we need two extra cycles to run it. And, well, two is actually pretty pessimistic because this is with a 4-stage pipeline. With a 5-stage pipeline, it would be 3 extra cycles. And many real processors have more than 5 stages, so that'd be even more cycles. And this is for a very common pattern in assembly. And we can do better. And to do better, we're going to make this observation here that if we look at the diagram I showed you earlier of like what's in pipeline registers at each step, when we store 900 in the decode execute registers, we have the value, the correct value here. So we're using here, we have the wrong value, and here we have the correct value. So a better solution would be if only we could just, you know, add a wire to send this value over here. Now, we don't always want to do that, right? Because that's not always going to be right. So we'll have a mux on that wire to decide whether to use it or not. And this idea is going to be called forwarding. We're going to take a value that's going to be written later on, and we're going to forward it to where we would want that value rather than waiting for the value to go through the register file normally. Questions about this idea, why we have an opportunity to save some time. Yes? How will we know when to forward it? We'll get to that exact question later. Yes? So questions, are we effectively skipping a whole stage? So by doing this, we're avoiding 2 cycles of stalling. Now, we're still going to store that 1700 in the register file. We're just going to do it later, like we normally would. But we're skipping the process of waiting for that value to be written and reading it out for the second instruction in this case. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Question. If this means that before the value sent to the register file, we're going to send it to the other instruction? Yeah. So let's look at what implementing this would look like. So we have our case here. And if we trace our instruction, we're going to have 900 and 800 for the second instruction going into the decode execute registers. And for the first instruction, we have the value we actually want, the new R9, 1700 there. And that's what we want to use to replace the wrong 900 we read. So to facilitate that, we're going to have our connection, and we're going to have a mux to implement it. So we'll have a mux where we choose either the value from the register file, or in case that's wrong, we're going to have the new value, our 1700. Now, this is just sort of one case here, but there's some other things which could happen. So for example, let's say R9 was the second register, not the first. In that case, we're going to have the wrong value coming out of our source B, meaning that we want to have a second mux. So we can select it to replace that. And we're going to actually have a few more cases like that. So this is not going to be actually super simple to implement, but it's going to save us a lot of cycles. That's why it's going to be worthwhile. Yes?
So isn't the value going backwards?
Question, isn't the value going backwards? So you say it's going from a future stage to an old stage. So that is one way of looking at it. The way I'd look at it is going from a past instruction to a future instruction. Or from an earlier instruction to a later instruction. Because remember, later stages have earlier instructions in them. Because our instructions go, from the first stage to the last stage. Other questions? Okay, so there's a good question earlier of how do we figure out when we need to forward? So we have these muxes. How do we write that in HCL? So let's think of this case here. So here we have a case where we want to sometimes, instead of using the output of the register file, we want to take the value that's going into the execute write back registers and send it into our decode execute registers. So our HCL code is going to look something like this, where d underscore valet is the input to our decode execute registers. And sometimes it's going to be set to the input to our execute writeback registers, which I'm assuming is called evalE. This name's from our textbook. Otherwise, it's the output of the register file as usual. So what should the condition be? And what we're going to do, and you need to figure out which one, but we're going to figure out what to do based on comparing two register indexes. We're going to look at one register index for the instruction we're actually trying to fetch a value for from the register file, and one register index from elsewhere. We're going to compare them and say, are these the same register or not? To determine whether forwarding makes sense. So I'll give you a minute, figure out, talk with yourself, amongst yourselves, what condition do we want? And remember our register naming convention, so capital W would be outputs into the writeback stage, lowercase e would be inputs from the execute stage, lowercase d would be inputs from the decode stage. who'd like some more time? Okay, several people. Okay, let's see. So who thinks A? Okay. B. Few people. C. Majority. D. E. Something else. Okay, so most people figured out that we want ESD. So the reason for that is that we have our value we're going to write on a wire called eval-e, which we know is eval-e because it's what I wrote here. And paired with that, we have our place where we're going to write that ESD, which we computed, you know, got back here, apparently. And that's the one we want to use. We don't want to use WSD because that corresponds to the value on the wire after the execute write back registers, which is not what we're forwarding here. We'll discuss later that we actually need to care about forwarding this value, but we'll get to that with a different mux. So questions, I probably should highlight the answer to questions and how I figured this out. Yes. Why can't it be B? Because WSD is from the instruction that is before 1. So if there's an instruction 0, that would be in the write-back stage. That would have WSD, the value here, and WValue. It'd have its own value, its writing. And that would not be the value from instruction 1, which would be eval-e and ESD. Just that. Question? Other questions? And a way I like thinking about this is that we have our destination register, which is paired with the value that's going to be written there. And when they're paired, they always start the same way. So note that what we end up with is we end up with something checking with E using a value from E in that condition. That this deliberate sort of result of how we name things. Yes? So we only have to forward ahead one cycle. So in this case, we are only forwarding ahead one cycle. We are going to have to forward in more cases than that, including ahead two cycles or something like that. We'll talk about that later, but that's in fact something we'll have to do. And the preview of that is that we're going to have to add another input to both of these muxes to make that happen. And we'll talk about that later. Okay, so since we're using our destination registers, this motivates something I did earlier. When we were designing our pipeline processor from our single cycle processor, one of the things I did that our textbook also does is I moved our destination register computation to decode. And we didn't need to do this functionality-wise, but it's really convenient to have our destination register indexes available earlier, so we can do these sorts of comparisons. So by doing this, we have our DESTE and DESTM available right away, so we can always do that check, do we want to do forwarding or not using those. So that's why I'd recommend you do that, even though, yes, you can make a correct pipeline processor that will work without doing that, but it's going to make writing the forwarding logic a lot harder if you have to like duplicate the computation of the destination registers every time you want to check if forwarding is needed. So that's, yeah. So would you only have forwarding in the decode phase? So our textbook only forwards to the decode phase. Real processors do more than that, and we'll talk about why a bit later. The logic behind why is forwarding to the decode phase the main thing we do is that, well, we just read a value from a register, we want to replace that. And decode is where we read it, so it's the first time we can replace it. We'll talk about a case where that doesn't work later. But for the most part, that's what we're going to want to do. And I guess I'd note that this idea of having DESTY and DESTM computed in advance, you know, really also helps out with stalling logic if we wanted to do that. Also, our textbook follows this convention. This is really handy, of that they have their things they call val e and val m, or they only set them to the values that will eventually go to DESTY or DESTM. So if you want to do differently, that's fine. But you know, our textbook's following this convention in a large part to make forwarding logic easier. So we know that if DESTY says something, we can look at val e. For the corresponding value, we don't have to like figure out if it's val a or val e or depending on the instruction or something like that. So, what have we done? So we have stalling, we had two cycles, forwarding, we have one, and I sort of drawn how the value travels. So with forwarding, like we stored the value in one cycle, decoded in the next. In forwarding, we get the value from the end of execute to the end of decode. So mentioned that we don't all just forward from one cycle away. So we have the same data hazard problem, but here we have a different separation. So here we're reading 900 while we're adding while 1700 is being stored. So our 1700 is sitting here, our 900 is sitting here. So we want to do this path to forward, which is by a different number of cycles. It's a different forwarding path. So to implement that, we're going to add additional cases to the mux with additional checks. So in this case, we're going to forward not what we had previously, which was we had eval e. Here we have wval e we're going to forward. And that's going to be based on wdesty instead of edesty. And we're going to need both of those cases for both of the mucks for a and b. And this is with a 4-stage pipeline. With a 5-stage pipeline, we're going to have an additional set of those cases. And also with our 5-stage pipeline, we're going to have DESTM2, so another full set of those cases. Yes, your question?
So would like the condition
for this one be if W value is equal to a register, or sort of like, value? So the question is, would the condition be W val e equals reg source A, yeah, and colon W, val, sorry, W val E, W desti equals reg source A, which I should rewrite cleanly since that is important. So the condition is W dest E is reg source A, and the thing we would set it to is W val E based on that. Other questions? Yeah.
Why do you need both of these?
So why do we need both to go from execute to from execute and from write back? Because the placement of the instruction we want to forward to, we're going to have some instruction here, and depending on where the instruction we depend on is, it could either be here or here, just depending on how many instructions away it is in the program. So in this case, it's two instructions away. In the previous case, it was one. And that affects where the value we want is going to be. So to handle both of those cases, we're going to have to do both of those forwardings. Otherwise, we have to do some stalling. Yes. So the question is, if we had five register banks, so five stages. So if we had five stages, would we have five items for our value? So generally, we can't forward from fetch because there's no value we want to forward there. We can't forward from decode because that's our own instruction. So it's only the later stages which are going to matter. So five will give us four cases. But in our full processor, we're going to have two different values potentially we're storing. So that will add another bunch of cases from the valm and destm. Other questions? Yeah?
Is it equivalent if you compare E of value E as output to compare the output of the N?
So, question is, instead of using eval e, could I use the output of the adder?
Yeah.
If that was different, yeah.
Yeah.
There will be the same value. You still need to know where it's going to be written to do your check. And this is, I'm assuming you mean for the e-dest-d forwarding, which is not the path that's highlighted on this slide. Other questions? So questions with memory, I would have to do these checks with valm, yes, and you'd also have to do them with the memory stage for val e and valm. Other questions? Okay, so in our full processor, there's a bunch of forwarding paths, and I like to figure out what forwarding would happen by making a timeline like this. And to start out, I'm hoping we don't have to do any stalling. And I have my full processor, so this has five stages, so we have a memory stage now. And basically I look for, okay, where is a dependency? So here I have a dependency. I'm using the value of R9 in the sub, which is written by this add. So I need the value at the end of decode, because I need it before the execute stage, which means I'm going to forward it into decode from the adds execute. That's Why from the adds execute? Because that's what it's in at the time, right? I can't do this because that means I have a time machine. So we're not allowed to do that, so I have to go from execute. Yes? So the question is, what's the effect on the cycle time? Is forwarding going to increase the cycle time? And the answer is probably, because these muxes are on the critical path. Generally, the small increase in the cycle time from adding these muxes to the critical path is not going to be a big enough issue that we don't have to do it, because we're saving lots of time by not stalling. But this means that we shouldn't do something, incredibly silly in how we forward of like we shouldn't try to forward to here, for example, because that would make our critical path longer. Like if we forwarded from here to here somehow, then our critical path now includes an add and the register file read, that would be bad. right? That would be a huge increase in cycle time, so we're not going to do that. We're always going to forward from the end of a stage to the end of another stage. But we are going to add this mux, so it's going to increase our cycle time somewhat. It's not going to be a big deal. Okay, so we have our first forwarding path from execute to decode for R9. Then I look for other dependencies, and I have R9, and add is being used by the RMove queue, and normally it's going to be written at the end there of the writeback stage, and that's after it would be read, so I need to forward it. So that forwarding from writeback to the code. Yes?
Why would you need to forward it now if there's two instructions in between?
So the question is, why do we need to forward it now even though there's two instructions in between? This is a 5-stage pipeline, not a 4-stage pipeline. So with our 4-stage pipeline, the add instruction would have already been done, but since this is a 5-stage pipeline, it's not. Can I answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Other questions? Okay. So let's go on. And finally, we have, oh, I don't have a slide for this. We have R9 here from there. For that we don't need to forward because our XOR reads the R9 after it's written. There's no need to do forwarding, and it's very good there's no need to do forwarding because we wouldn't have anywhere to forward from. You know, that wouldn't be possible. There would be nowhere to get it other than the register file. So then our next dependency is going to be right, R11. So the sub writes to R11, and the mRemove queue reads from it to compute the address. We need to compute the address in execute, so we want to have it available at the end of the code. So we're going to have forwarding from the end of execute to the end of the code. The value of R11 is also read by RMove queue. So in the next cycle, it's going to be forwarded from subq's memory stage to the decode of RMove queue, so it's available in time for the address computation in execute. And you might say, oh, the sub doesn't do anything in memory. Doesn't do any work, quote unquote, but we are going to have the value passing through there, and we're going to check if that value is needed elsewhere. The RMove queue writes R10, which is used by the XOR. So we're going to forward it from MRMove queue's memory stage to XOR's decode to have it in time for XOR's execute stage. And I do have a slide for that. Okay. And I think that's all the dependencies there. So questions about all these forwarding paths here? Yeah? So the question, when do I forward something out from not the end of the stage? That is not something we're going to do. We're always going to forward from the end of one stage to the end of another. So the reason I'm not going to do the other thing is because I'd be making my stage longer. Because if I forward, the value, our critical path is going to be everything before the forwarding and everything after the forwarding up to a pipeline register. This has not increased our critical path much because everything after the forwarding is basically nothing. But if we're going to put like a huge thing there, that's a problem. That's not forwarding, that's making our pipeline stages different. Yes?
Why do we take from memory for R10 and R11?
So why do we take from memory for R10 and R11? So we'll start with R11 from subq, and that's because the RMove queue needs it, and it needs it before execute, so we need to get it here. So I look, how can I get it here? Well, I have to get it from the subtract instruction. And the subtract instruction's in the memory stage, so that's where the value is going to be, somewhere in the memory stage wires. So I'm going to use the memory stage wires to get it, because that's where it is. I don't have any other options. Yeah. And similar is true for mRMove queue. note that for every move Q, we couldn't get the value earlier because it just got retrieved from the data memory. Okay. Other questions? Question is, can I forward across cycles by adding a register on the forward path? Potentially, we could have some scheme where we do that. The computations of when the forward would be a lot more complicated. But generally, if the value is going to the register file to be stored, we're already sending it through a register, and we just want to take advantage of that. So for example, when we're forwarding from subq, the reason it's in the memory stage is because it has to get from the execute to the writeback stage already, even when we're not doing forwarding. So we're not going to like add extra registers to do forwarding because the values are already going to be passed through registers for us. Yes? So the question is what the conditions would be. Well, generally, the conditions will be more of this, but we'll replace E with some other letter, and we'll replace the capital E with some M. And that should be our conditions if we follow the convention our textbook follows. That dest E, dest M, we compute early, and val E is something that's going into dest E, val M is something that's going into dest M. If we do that, that's what our conditions are going to be. Yes? Sure.
So you said that the values forward from the end of one stage to the end of another, right?
Yeah.
So how would that work with like the capital W underscore value? Isn't that at the beginning of the writeback stage?
So the question, isn't this at the beginning of the writeback stage? Okay. So question is, we always forward from the end of one to the end of the other. So I guess we can forward from earlier than the end without it affecting the cycle time. So that's not an issue. And that's the, so yeah, so I probably misstated that. We always forward to the end of a stage is the important part. And usually from the end of a stage, but it doesn't matter if it's not from the end because that's not gonna make the cycle time longer. Yes?
How do we know that if the dest D is from the stage that we actually want?
How do we know if the dest D is from the stage that we actually want? So we have different versions of dest D here, and they have either no corresponding value because we haven't computed yet. So in decode, we have d dest d, but we don't know where that's what's going there, so we can't forward anything from decode. For execute, the thing that goes with e dest d, the execute dest d, is e val e. If we're using any other version of val e, it's not from execute, so we shouldn't use it. Does that answer your question? And we get this just by following the convention that when we're writing the logic for the execute stage, we put the value we want to go eventually into the register file's input E into something we call val E, and we always prefix it with the stage. Yes? Question is, will it be possible that we can't solve some data hazard by forwarding? Yes, we will get to some cases, well, the most important case where that doesn't happen in a bit. So other questions? So I showed you there's all these opportunities for doing forwarding, and we don't always have to. So another thing about this is that if we have multiple ways we can do forwarding, sometimes we'll have a choice. So for example, here, I need to forward the value of R8 to the last add instruction. And one forwarding path is I could take it from the memory stage of the first add instruction, there's a value from R8 in there, and I could send it to the end of the code. Another option is I could take it from the execute stage of the second instruction. And I want to do the second instruction because that's a more recent value of R8. The other one is now old. So I have these two possible ways I could forward. I want to choose the one where it's from the more recent instruction, which is going to be from an earlier stage, because that means the instruction started more recently. So this is why our textbook authors chose to make MUX expressions, case expressions, work the way they do. So the way we solve this in HCL is we make sure we order our MUX cases correctly. So the earlier stages take priority over the later ones. So questions? Yeah.
Just to confirm, on the previous slide, it was a need a 4 from the E to E at the first two levels.
So on the previous slide, the forwarding case we want would be this first one, yes, from eval E to deval A. Oh. Or deval B in this case, sorry. But other questions? Yeah. Question is, for your MUXes, you should have the earlier stages above the later stages? Yes, because the earlier stages are where the more recent values would be. Other questions? Okay. Yes?
So the same MUXes functions from forwarding the first instruction to the second and the second to third in the asymmetric code.
Sorry?
The same MUX forwards the first E to the first D from R10 to 11 and the E to D from...
So the question is, we have one MUX which would handle the forwarding from the first to the second and from the second to the third instruction?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So another example of cases where you have multiple forwarding paths is sometimes we'll have two values forwarded just because we read two registers. So in this case, I have R8 forwarded from the first add, and R12 forwarded from the second add. There's no conflict here. This is val A and val B, if we're following the textbook's naming convention. We just have two values forwarded. That's actually a pretty common case. Just means that we have our MUX for val A, MUX for val B, and both of them hit cases. Questions? This? Okay, so let's do this exercise. Give you a few minutes. So I have my timing diagram. I'm assuming we don't have to do any stalling. Question is, R8 and R9, how are they forwarded? Are they not forwarded? Were they forwarded from execute write back memory? And our sub queue and add queue. Note that this top one is an add queue and this bottom one is an and queue. They are different. I'm asking about R8 and R9, the two things that are used by add queue. How are they forwarded? Yes. Sorry? The question is, which one do you need to forward? Do you need to forward from, do you want to not forward that value, or do you want to forward it? And if you are, where are you getting it from? You're getting it from decode, execute, or memory. Decode, execute, memory, or write back. Right. Because we don't forward decode to decode. That doesn't make sense. Okay, who'd like some more time? Okay, so for subq, is it subq R8 is blank add q, not forwarded? Okay. So we have a majority there, and that I will agree with, so not forwarded. And why is that? Well, because add q doesn't write to R8. Uses R8, doesn't write to it. So how about XOR Q? R9 is forwarded, or not forwarded, or forwarded. So is it R9 not forwarded from to XOR from add Q? Is it forwarded from execute, from memory? Okay, so we have a consensus there. Okay. And Q, is R9 not forwarded from add Q? Okay, so we have plurality there, which I agree. Why not? You're going to say, oh, add Q writes R9, and it's not actually written yet, but we have a better place to get it. We have a more recent version from XOR Qs from execute. Yes? Question is, we always take it from the most recent one, so we're always going to structure our case expression so the most recent is at the top. Yes. Okay. So talked about, yeah. Sorry. So question, if the write-back stage is not even used, do we still need it? So generally, we're not going to add extra logic to the tech that we don't need to write back. So even though you are correct that the write back of add q doesn't actually matter, we're not going to omit that. Okay, so we talked about doing forwarding, and there's an earlier question about does it always work, and the answer is no. So let me show you the biggest example where the answer is no. And this is an MR move q followed by a use of the value. And you might say, oh, well, we need RBX here. So we need it into code. So I'm just going to forward to there. Why? That doesn't work because the value of RBX is computed in the memory stage. We get it from the data memory. We don't have it in execute. We can't do that forwarding. And if we send it from the memory stage, it's too late. We already would have wanted to do the addition. It's too late. We can't, or the subtraction. So our solution is going to be to stall and forward. That's going to give us the minute. This way we only need to stall one cycle instead of a whole bunch, but we're going to combine the two to do that. Okay, and this is what our textbook calls the load use hazard. Okay, and that's where I'll leave off today.